this podcast, we are going to do the 2015 final school year exam covering the specialised topic of medical physics. We're only going to do the first two questions because that's enough to do in a podcast. And the first question is to do with the theory of ultrasounds, why you do it in a body, how things would go, and being able to use that on to look at the speed of sound and different, or the amount of reflection off different types of body tissue. And the second question will be about looking at an X-ray and versus a PET scan, a PET scan, positron electron tomography. Yes, I also would remember what the E is for it. Okay, look, this is Peter Hill Explains, where we enter into a conversation of things scientific. I've had a break of a day or two from doing exams to get my mind together to think through what I'm doing. And at the top of the thing is I'm trying to get more across into cardiac rehabilitation, get my brain cells firing, to be on my top performance when I go back to work. And then I'm looking at the overall structure of it. And so first thing it is, I go off and try and give it a general feel of it. Then I give it a talk. Then I go through the formula sheet. Then I ask the questions in particular. So you've got the talk and the idea of where the talk is heading, the actual talk itself, the formula sheet. And so there's no surprises when we go through the question. I have a go at answering the question. I have a go at answering the question as best I can, and then I, sight unseen, I will read the official marking answer. So without further ado, we'll get into the general talk here. So ultrasound is a using sound waves. Ultrasound is anything above 20 kilohertz, 20,000 hertz, above the human hearing range, but it's in general used at 1 megahertz to 20 megahertz and sometimes beyond. And obviously the shorter the wavelength, the easier it is, the smaller that you can see things, and it's delivered by a piezoelectric crystal. This is a voltage applied to the crystal, creates the crystal to vibrate, and the crystal can vibrate very precisely in a very dense space. And the important thing is for creating arrays, you have an array of piezo crystals, so the head may be typically 5 centimeters across. It's a typical head I can remember, and of that head it will be broken into a millimeter, even sub millimeter transducers. The transducers that you apply the voltage source to it, and it will vibrate and send out an acoustic wave at different phases. This will travel through a coupling medium, a impedance matching into yet another impedance matching onto a gel into your body. So there should be, it's fairly well impedance matched into your body, and depending on what it's used for, it will go at certain depths and certain resolutions, and by varying the phase, the rate at which it goes. It's sort of, if you imagine a phase is like your finger running across a piano from the top to the bottom, it goes fast off in sequence, and if it hits off all at the same time, it goes straight ahead. If it hits off left to right, it will go left. The beam will go right to left, in actual fact, going through it. And so the beam goes through into the body, and there's an echo here. Now, there is this, I don't know whether, I think there has to be this misconception. What they've done is they've taken some early books about ultrasounds and about the physics of sound waves going into different mediums. So if you know how light reflects off a glass of water, it's because water's got a different refractive index, different speed for it. So there's actually speed of sound, but also the density of sound, because this is a matter wave. And you can actually have a density, the same speed, but a density change, which means you've got It will reflect the waves. Now, let's talk about a typical impedance mismatch. That's where you have a wave on a string attached to a wall, and you wave it up, and the wave will go all the way to the wall. It'll hit the wall and then bounce backwards. So with a spring, you can show this, a free spring, and you can release a wave on a spring. It goes all the way along. If it's held, the wave will reverse. If it's not held, so it's free, the wave will change phase and come back to you. And there's a formula for the amount of light which is reflected specularly all the way back to you. And that formula is for normal incidence. It varies for if you go at glancing incidence. And that's not necessarily how an actual ultrasound works. It actually, the uniformness of a medium, if it's uniform liquid like water, the acoustic waves don't reflect at all. But if there's a bit of inhomogeneity in it, it will reflect strongly. A combination of inhomogeneity and I'm just trying to think for something which is inhomogeneous. The word that comes up to me is the difference between a inhomogeneous would be, I suppose, if you vomited up minestrone soup, you'd have little bits and pieces in there, some liquid in there. So that would be different from homogeneous thing would possibly be a cream caramel. A mousse is, mousse is not homogeneous because it's got air pockets in it, but cream caramel or a jelly is homogeneous. It's all the same. There's no change in density and structure in them. So in real ultrasounds, what they really look for is the inhomogeneity. Now, they actually don't necessarily teach that at school, but when you think about it, that's the way it is. And when I pointed out to a teacher and pointed across that they were quite concerned, quite aggressive, or I suppose aggressive, and they said, look, if you dare teach anyone that at school, you'll get into so much trouble. So I fortunately I haven't had to teach that at a school. So it's the wave coming back. So the thing that launches the wave can get the wave put back through it, so it's the same impedance matching. This is getting across. So an idea of a fundamental impedance matching, what's something in life which is good for impedance matching? I have to think. That's a speaker is, it's an electronics and acoustics term, impedance. You'd have to really look, I have to really think about how to tell it. But the sound wave comes back into the transducer, the little piezo, and the piezo has this effect because it's got a dipole strained field, crystal field. I have to think it's a ceramics, it's titanium ones, it's the crystals inside it. And it has the effect that when you squeeze it, it creates a voltage. So an example of a piezo is a barbecue lighter or an oven lighter that it puts a very big spark through it. You hear that click when you click. Your hammer hits a piezo. The piezo creates a large voltage and it produces a cross. So piezo is being very small and very light, are very responsive. So you can put any frequency and any wavelength that you want into it. And in general, what happens is that it sends out a short wave pulse. And it listens to things coming back. So it's not a continuous ultrasound, though it looks like it. You go, oi, 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 oi. And the longer it takes to get back, the further in it is. And there's some other calculations you can work out from a number of things, from the differential wave velocity of a pulse coming back from an interface, what the speed is, and reconstruct the space. You can do that on computers. You can't do that in your head. That's ultrasounds. Ultrasound is also therapeutic. You can actually crank up the volume, or crank up the volume, the speed, and will heat up a certain area. So what they really like doing now is doing an ultrasound sensor. They wrap it to you and change the electronics so it can focus in on a point, and then they do MRI So they can actually physically see it, and they can actually measure temperatures with the MRI as well. And they can actually cook you from the inside. Precision. The computers can actually, you can outline a tumor, and it will just cook it. It's pretty amazing thing to see. So so this is important. I think we'll get into an understanding of what impedance is when we actually do the formulas and some of the table coming up. Now we come up to positron emission tomography. That's it, the E is for emission, PET. So let's go through the process of it. This is a functional imaging, so it is designed that the marker is put into the body and it moves to a zone with either a tag or a sugar, and it identifies parts of the bodies which are functioning in a particular way, particular orbits. Now, positron emission tomography is absolutely great because there's a huge amount of radiation can penetrate a fair distance. These gamma rays, the annihilation gamma rays, can go a fair distance, and so they're detected by the detectors, but they can travel through several meters of flesh, because if you're only in centimeters, that's only a very tiny amount of the energy is actually deposited in you. So that's an advantage of it. And it's also very, very sensitive. It's got a low signal to noise ratio. That means that you can pick things up with a very small amount of it. So it's very good in that sense. And it has a positron, which is a piece of antimatter. An antimatter electron goes out and it will meet an electron, and when it meets, it will annihilate, in sending out two rays from the point of annihilation in opposite directions, pretty much random angle. But when I say angle, one angle will be in, say, two dimension. It'll either be, say, at 10 degrees and 100 degrees, 10 degrees and no, 10 degrees and 190 degrees. Sorry, I'm just feeling a bit tired to get off. So they're equal and opposite. So if you put a detectors equal and opposite and timing detectors, spatial and timing detectors, you can actually work out a line for which that radiation has come across. And then you can work out another line, and you can use triangulation to, in effect, slice through a patient who's alive. The computer can do tomography to get across here. So it's the functional stuff. It's fluorine, F18, I think it must be, F18. You get oxygen 18, and you accelerate a proton. The proton bashes out a neutron and displaces it. It's pretty much like snooker, where you your ball goes forward and the ball that you've hit stops. So that's what happens. And so a proton gets replaced with a neutron gets replaced with a proton. It's much more stable being a neutron. So the proton turns back into a neutron by emission of positron, and this positron goes out. There's a few neutrinos involved in it all, and then the positive antimatter electron annihilates, and so you can make this fluorine, and you can attach the fluorine via various chemical markers to various hormones, but generally sugar, and the sugar gets taken up very quickly by the people. I don't think it goes, I think they inject sugar directly into you, because it's, I don't know what the lifetime of it is. I do know that it has to be continuously made in Australian nuclear reactors and shipped out very quickly around the country, because it doesn't have a long lifetime. So that's the general lecture. I've decided not to make it an exhaustive lecture, but just to make it a generalised lecture to get you through on it. And we'll go to the equation sheet, and the equation sheet is Z equals rho V. Now, Z is the impedance. Now, I wonder what units the impedance is in. It's in K kilograms, kilograms meters to the minus 2, seconds to the minus 2, because it's a density times the speed, but essentially it tells you how happy something is taking a wave energy. So if the impedance changes, you will get a reflection at the impedance barrier. And then we get the next thing, and this is for a beam going into a flat onto a glass plate. IR on I naught, the reflected intensity on the transmitted intensity, I'll have to stop soon, is Z2 minus Z1 all squared on Z2 plus Z1 squared. Okay, we've got a general formula for the reflected normal incidence, reflected power for things of different impedance. The greater the impedance difference, the greater the reflected power is. So if it's the same impedance, it's got a zero up the top. If it's in generally a high impedance stuff, if it's low impedance in general, it will have a higher reflected power, because that will mean that your Z's at the bottom, Z2 squared, Z for impedance. So I'll read the formula again. IR on I incident, I call it I naught, equals the square of Z. 2 minus Z1 all squared on Z2 plus Z1 all squared to get it going across. Now we'll read the questions in detail. Question A1, describe how ultrasound can be used to distinguish between different bone types, different types of tissue in the body. I'll just go on the answer that I know that they teach. Different tissues, so describe how it is. So they're after a description. So different tissues have different impedances, and different impedance, if you go from one type of tissue to another, you can tell by the amount of reflected light what the impedance is, what the change in impedance of those different tissues are. So you knowing that you start off with the skin, you can actually work your way through. So there's an impedance formula which you can give for it. So the description of it is that the ultrasonic pulse goes out of the detector, goes out, there's a pulse, a wave train goes out, hits the tissue interface, and the amount reflected will go back, and so its position will be located with the echo time, so it's deeper in with a longer echo time. Now, in reality, let's look at it. When you see an ultrasound, it doesn't produce a cartoon drawing of the outer surfaces. In actual fact, if it's the edge of a bone pointing at 90 degrees away, there'll be no reflected ultrasound from that interface, because according to this, it's a specular reflection. So this is a sort of a generalized formula. So this formula, in general, accounts for it. So this type of reflection, which is interface reflection, although it can be done, would only leave you with a cartoon drawing. Only the particular interfaces would you see the actual impulse of things. Now, of course, it depends how you go. You can get some eye ultrasounds where it's a circular thing and it's going through, and you can actually get the interface reflected out specularly. What in general happens, what happens is that different components have different reflective ability. So pure water has no structure whatsoever, so that's black, whereas bones got a lot of structure, a lot of pores and stuff like that, and that's a strong echo signal back, whereas fat has a low reflectivity, whereas vascular tissues which have got capillaries, so they're really complex things, these capillaries and the structures in an organ, that will reflect backwards, and so you get inhomogeneous scattering. So the scattering particle is quite small, and it will scatter in not specularly, but in a 360 degree or 4 pi stair radian reflection. And so, in general, if you look at, say, the ultrasound of a baby in a mother's womb, the amniotic fluid and the bladder full of water will be see-through. It will be black, whereas the baby will be coloured. The mother's bone, the pelvic bone, will be a whiter game. And so, in actual fact, the modern day ultrasounds give a rich amount of information. You can actually do an ultrasound through the amniotic fluid and actually inspect the chambers of the baby's heart, because they'll be dark and black. And so you don't get an outline for it. So let's read what the answer is that they have. When an ultrasound strikes the boundary between two different types of tissue, reflection will only occur if there is a difference in the acoustic impedance between the tissues. Well, that's plainly incorrect, because your different tissues have a different background reflectivity. Tissues such as bone, muscles and fat have significantly different acoustic impedances, and therefore strong reflection will occur at such boundaries, allowing the tomographer to easily distinguish between the two types. Well, in fact, the actual quantity of reflection is pretty much the same when you're going in and out of a boundary. It's like you can swap Z1, Z2, you get the same amount of a boundary, and that's just not necessarily very true overall. When you actually look at an ultrasonic picture, you don't see the hard lines between the amount of reflectivity, but this is an example of something which is got in and taught. Question 2. Use the data from the table below to calculate the acoustic impedance of bone and hence determine the ratio of reflected to the initial intensity for ultrasound striking a muscle-bone boundary. So they give you muscle, that's 1.71, and bone, you have to multiply those two together to get the Z, and they've said that Z equals rho V, and I've got a rho and a V, and we'll just go through that here. So rho V is those two numbers multiplied together, which I can't get. In the table here, they've got 1.7 by 10 to the 8, and so the rho V they have here is 7.79 by 10 to the 8 for bone, because the impedance is very high. So it's not, it's not white. And so the amount reflected back on the muscle bone barrier this is, look, it's bizarre. You then put it into the formula of Z2 minus Z1 on Z1 plus Z2. And so it's basically, you can leave the 10 to the 10 to the 6s out. It's 7.79 minus 1.71 over 7.79 plus 7.71 all squared, and that amount reflected is 41% of 4.1%. Then again, look, if you do it, the actual amount reflected will obviously depend if you've got blood against there or liquid against there, but in your general ultrasound the bone will still be white and the liquid will be black. I don't know how they get to it. Okay, question 2. After a patient has been treated for lung cancer, no tumours were detected in the x-ray image of the lungs. The doctor has now recommended that a patient have a whole of body PET scan. Outline two differences between the method used to produce x-ray image and the method used to produce a PET scan. So you've got two methods. One is the production of the x-ray. So the x-ray in an x-ray is produced by electrons hitting a a tube and going, hitting a piece of metal, and that metal creating an inner electron vacancy, which is filled with the emission of an X-ray photon, and that then is collimated and filtered and shone onto the patient. So that's the generation of the X-ray. The X-ray comes from the outside. In the PET scan, the radionuclide is put onto a tracer and goes to the functional location of the tumour. That's one difference in the difference of the X-ray production. In detection, the X-ray is simply from the external source gone to an external detector. In a PET scan, you have a ring of coincident sources which detect the X-ray, and then successive quantities or statistics collected for different pairs generate a three-dimensional image of it. So the differences are in production and image collection at the top of image which are collected. Okay, so let's read the answer that they have coming out of this one. It says, an X-ray uses X-ray radiation produced by an X-ray tube, whereas a PET uses gamma rays produced by positron electron interaction annihilation. The source of X-ray radiation is outside the body, whereas the source of gamma rays is inside the body. Okay, well, I said a few extra things. Justify the doctor's recommendation to use whole-of-body PET scan 3 marks. I don't know whether the justification is for three things. So the justification for using a whole-of-body PET scan is that he is looking for he knows there's a tumour, and so doing whole-of-body checks for the tumour in all parts of the body. Justify the use of a whole-body PET scan. The use of a PET scan specifically targets small tumours or tumours before, with the appropriate traces before it's there. By including the lungs here, so there's one is the entire body, two is the sensitivity, three is that if he's giving a PET scan, the cost to the patient is from actually the radiation cost is fixed, but the detection cost is only marginal, so it may only cost, say, 10% of the cost of a PET scan to actually do the actual scanning, so you're not saving all that much overall. That's all I can think. And PET scan gives you a three-dimensional image of a functional tumour. I really am struggling to get 3 marks out of this. Let's see how they give. Provides justification that includes relevant limitations of conventional X-ray. What? Provides justification that includes relevant information of conventional X-ray and and advantages of PET scan. Well, really, that question, to get that 3 marks, should be justify the doctor's recommendation to use a whole-of-body PET scan rather than an X-ray. B, that's a really poorly answered question. The failure of their official answer, the failure of X-ray, doesn't mention. The question is, justify the doctor's recommendation to use a whole-of-body PET scan. All right, in the thing it says, after the patient had been treated for lung cancer, no tumours were detected in an X-ray image of the lung. Okay, that should be a lot more clearer. The failure of the X-ray image to show the presence of any tumours is not sufficient to clear the patient of lung cancer. Conventional X-rays image soft tissue tissue well, and during the treatment, the size of the tumour may have decreased to below the limit of resolution. The PET scan, however, is very effective in detecting regions of high metabolic activity, which are characteristic of tumour regardless of the size. This is because the radioisotope used is metabolized at different rates by the body tissues and organs, resulting in easily identifiable hotspots if the activity is unusually high. A whole body scan will also detect if the cancer has spread to other parts of the body. Okay, so it says outlines limitation of X-ray, or outlines the advantage of a PET, or identifies limitation of conventional X-rays and advantage of a PET, or identifies the limitation of conventional X-rays and advantage of PET scans for two. So, look, I may have only got 2 marks there, but I wouldn't have read that one. Justify, the question was not really sufficiently worded to force me to go to 3 marks. I don't know how you would have done that. So just let's reread it once again before we sign off. The overall question starts off. After a patient has been treated for lung cancer, no tumours were detected in an X-ray image of the lungs. So that's really a critical thing, that no tumours were detected. So given that no tumours were detected by the X-ray, can we safely conclude that there's no more tumours? No, we have to do a thing. Oh, God, so I can do that if you read it slowly enough. Justify the doctor's recommendation to use a whole of body PET scan given situation. So perhaps doing justification, you'd have to say the justification of given, and you list the facts, are this. So that may be a technique that if you ever asked to do a justification, you say the justification of this given that, and that will get you up to 3 marks. So that's perhaps what you should do to do a justification question. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains. I hope you keep on thinking, doing, and teaching science.